Item number 11.
Who just got here in the audience?
I'm telling you. From the Director of Procurement.
Welcome to County Government.
Department of Administrative Services requesting authorization to execute an agreement with Encore One DBA Clean Power for the provision of housekeeping and janitorial services in Milwaukee County facilities. This item was also referred to the Committee on Finance, Personnel, and Audit. And for the purposes of this committee, this item is informational only.
Unless we decide to do something else.
And
all right. Let's lock and load, gentlemen.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Supervisors. We appreciate the opportunity to be back here again and provide you with more expansive information. As you are aware, this whole effort began last year in 2012 with a collaborative team across various county departments, including HHS, DOT, facilities, and procurement. Patrick Lee, who is our procurement director, has reached out, I think, to all of you over the last week or so, and I think several of you have had the opportunity to visit with him personally to get a little bit more information about what we are proposing. We would hope that at the end of this discussion that you would be in a position to perhaps provide some input with your colleagues on Finance Committee so this can get on the agenda for Finance Committee for action. Finally, Mr. Lee will be spearheading this discussion as he did last time around. Thank you very much.
And you are?
My name is Don Tyler, and I'm the Director of Administrative Services.
Thank you. Mr. Lee, take your time. Go over thoroughly, please.
Very good. Thank you for the opportunity, Chairman and Supervisors, to present some additional information related to a request for proposal that was let related to housekeeping and janitorial services for 15 Milwaukee County facilities. I'll go through the methodology for which we acquired, but also provide you some additional information related to the contractor if you would like, and also address any particular issues that you possibly may have that I am able to. Historically, housekeeping and janitorial services have been provided to Milwaukee County over the last 3 years on a basis of contractual relationship. These relationships managed 15 facilities. The services were provided by Clean Power, predominantly out at BHD, Mid-America, predominantly at the courthouse complex, and Created to Clean, predominantly at COGS Center. Prior to the issuance of the request for proposal, the procurement department gathered up interested individuals in each of these particular departments in order to develop the RFP. This was an effort in order to develop not only consolidated methodologies for the cleaning of our facilities, performance standards, review standards related to the individual contractors, but also an effort to do vendor rationalization and justification for the expenditures that we made. Prior to the RFP, we also did some spend and analysis related to this particular category in an attempt to determine the volume of dollars that Milwaukee County spent in this particular area, possibly also in light of historical spend. On October 29th, 2012, the Department of Administration Facilities Management, the Department of Transportation, and the Health and Human Services cooperatively issued the RFP known as 928003 pursuant to Chapter 32 Acquisition Guidelines. Soliciting proposals from vendors for housekeeping and janitorial services for select Milwaukee County facilities. Proposals were due December 3rd, 2012, providing a 5-week period of time for preparation of the proposals. The RFP outlined such elements as minimum standards and requested services in order for the proposers to offer solutions to the objectives, problems, and needs set forth in the RFP. Proposers were encouraged to define how they intended to meet or exceed the RFP requirements. The RFP was developed with direct input from facility stakeholders and operational personnel. I want to highlight this particular point because this RFP was not done in a vacuum, but with individuals that would have to live with the results of the request for proposal on a daily basis. The RFP described evaluation criteria in advance, including such elements as cost, technical knowledge and experience, quality of labor and personnel, and reference work history, and the relative weights applied to each of these criteria. This was provided to all respondents to the proposal prior to their submission. Broad notification of the RFP was performed via publication, posting on the Milwaukee County Procurement website, posting on the Milwaukee County Business Opportunity Portal, use of the county's e-notify system, and a direct identification of potential vendors. A pre-bid conference was also held, providing opportunity for all vendors. This meeting was mandatory, so that we received appropriate responses. Tour of all facilities covered by the RFP. At the conclusion of the bidding period, numerous proposals were received related to this acquisition. The RFP did divide the specific county facilities into three categories: Group A buildings, those managed by DAS Facilities Management; Group B buildings, those managed by the Department of Health and Human Services; and Group C buildings, those managed by DOT. While the RFP reserved the right to award different groups of buildings to different vendors, the RFP clearly stated that it was Milwaukee County's intention to execute a single prime vendor contract for all janitorial services in all buildings covered under this RFP. This approach is in concert with the comprehensive facilities management program we are undergoing as a result of the facility study completed by CBRE earlier this year, encouraging a, quote, one county, one landlord approach to facilities. At the time the RFP was issued, multiple vendors, six operating under six different price agreements, were providing janitorial services to Milwaukee County pursuant to price agreements that were set to expire on or around December 31st. Currently, these vendors continue to provide these janitorial services on a month-to-month basis on the terms contained in the expired price agreements. This report has been prepared with the information about the RFP responses that can be released at this time. I've provided the information related to the contract, the individual at award, and also related to any protests, of which there was none. I guess the discussion of this particular issue is prior to the receipt of the RFP responses. DAS determined to convene to give you a background how we approached this. We decided to convene an evaluation panel to review proposals received in response to the RFP in order to ensure that various internal stakeholders' requirements were met, and to perform an individual and independent evaluation of scoring criteria as definitely outlined within the RFP. While not required under Chapter 32, the evaluation panel was established to provide additional evaluative expertise. In Chapter 32, it can be unilaterally, if you want to use that word, decided that the procurement director can make a decision in relationship to this contract. But I felt it was in the best interest of the county not only to prepare and execute this RFP through an evaluation panel, but also to intimately involve the stakeholders, again, that would have to live with the day-to-day responsibilities of the resulting vendor. Upon receipt of the RFP responses, each evaluation panel member performed an independent and individual evaluation related to both technical and cost elements of the RFP. Make a note that when an evaluation panel is formed, the evaluation panel, when they receive the request for proposal responses, they score the technical wholly and separate from the cost. They do not see the cost nor have seen the cost when they are evaluating the technical. So they are totally split apart. So you're judging the quality of the vendor regardless of cost. At the conclusion of the evaluation process, Clean Power's total evaluation score, including cost, technical knowledge, experience, quality, labor, personnel, references, and work history by the evaluation panel members, was the highest of all proposers and determined a competitive determined the competitive range. As such, evaluation panel members recommended that the Department of Administrative Services enter into negotiations with Clean Power. In an RFP process, you can accept the original submissions of the RFP, or in an RFP process that is designed so that once you receive responses to the RFP, you are allowed to enter into negotiations with individuals related to a best and final offer, and that's exactly what we did in this particular scenario. Again, after conducting additional in-depth tours of all our facilities and extensive negotiations, Clean Power submitted a best and final offer on May 22, 2013. This best and final offer was incorporated into the proposer's original RFP response to create the final terms of this agreement. Corporation Counsel, Risk Management, CBDP have all reviewed and approved the agreement and the underlying documents. Subsequent to the intent of the award, notifications were released to all proposers on June 4th, as required by Milwaukee County General Ordinance 3250. No protests were received. Therefore, 4240.6 related to protest and appeal submission to the PIRE, to me coming before you and the county board, prior to award has been satisfied. We've had a number of delays in regards to presenting this contract, we still anticipate a 3-year agreement, 1 year with two one-year renewals for this particular agreement to be executed or begin on the implementation of all 15 facilities by Clean Power. There certainly are many other items that I can address at your will. I understand there may or may not be questions that were voiced at the last meeting, and you were provided documents related to vendor qualifications or issues. I'm more than willing and ready to address the vast majority of those.
Are you done?
I'm done, sir.
Mr. Lee, you made a statement. I want you to clarify the statement.
Yes, sir.
What delays did you have so it'd be on the record? You said because of delays.
The most significant delay is beg your patience. In August 2012, we contacted the CBD department, provided forms and documentations related to the request for proposal as required under Chapter 32. We submitted Form DBE-12. In August, the Community Development Business Partners responded with a 25% goal for this acquisition and supplied all the necessary paperwork, forms, and information required for inclusion in the RFP. These forms were included in the RFP. Procurement met with CBDP staff related to the determination level and method and ability of proposers to achieve. CBDP participated in the mandatory pre-proposal vendor meeting and outlined process goals offered support to the vendor community. A direct answer to your question, on December 3rd, the proposals were publicly received by procurement and a technical and cost scoring began. The required CBDP vendor documentation for DBE responsiveness was immediately forwarded to CBDP on December 4th, 2012 for review and determination of each proposer's responsiveness. 1 month later, on January 7th, DAS received a response from CBDP identifying which vendors had been responsive to the DBE requirements. Discussions were subsequently held between the two departments, focusing on what type of determination was due DAS based upon Chapter 42 requirements. There was obviously a conflict in the view of the process, and DAS did not begin negotiations with any firm prior to the resolution, based upon we did not have the authority to move forward, we believed. On January 10th, 2013, a request for review, as we understood required under Chapter 42, was requested, and paperwork was again returned to CBDP. A request at this time was also made for Corporation Counsel to clarify for both parties of the processes outlined in Chapter 42. I can go through step by step if you'd like to do the transactions that went back and forth, but ultimately it was not until March that we received the information that on March 21st, subsequent meetings and discussions were held and documents exchanged in an attempt to resolve, resulting in a March 21st memo from CBTV providing a responsive good faith effort evaluation on the vendors and also providing guidance not to remove any vendors from consideration at that particular point. We felt that after the determination from CBDP on March 21st that we then could begin negotiations with the recommended vendor, and we did such at that particular time. So, again, a direct answer to your question, it was the discussions between CBDP and DAS as it related to this acquisition and our efforts in order to get a full and robust compliance with the DBE requirements of Chapter 42 within Milwaukee County.
Make the answers a little shorter from this point on, please.
I will attempt to, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm trying to understand, we regularly think of RFPs as the lowest, low bidder. This is clearly a negotiated agreement, so we should not presume that this was the lowest cost proposal, is my understanding, and I just wanted to make sure we can... I can verify that and understand what component of the overall score was attributable to cost.
I'll try to, Chairman, Supervisors, I will attempt to make it short. In general, there are two acquisition methodologies. A sealed bid, short version, you open the envelope and you take the lowest bid from a responsive and responsible vendor. You live with that bid. An RFP sealed bids are usually used in situations where specifications can clearly be defined, that I'm seeking, I'll use an example, green beans with such and such a nutritional value. You send out the request for a sealed bid, you get a price of 21 cents per can of green beans, and you buy those green beans from that vendor, assuming they meet all the other requirements of a responsible vendor, haven't been disbarred or anything like this. In a request for proposal situation, you may have specifications related to what you're trying to procure. Again, if I continue with the example of green beans. But in this particular case, you would place, let's say, in a score of, let's say there's 100 points available. You would place a score, if it was high, just nutritional value, you would say, I give 50 points to the award related to the nutritional value. Did you clear that nutritional value hurdle? The other points could be given related to, if you're familiar with scoring green beans using the USDA scoring methodology, there's a robust scoring methodology related to the acquisition of green beans. So you can give and take on judging those green beans. So you have generic, a national brand Del Monte, and you have a premium label S&W. At the beginning of the request for proposal process, you do allocate and tell the vendors, on a technical score for these green beans, I'm going to judge you on color, cut, appearance, taste. Mm-hmm. on the cost, you're going to say, I'm going to give you this much percentage weighted on cost. So you say one person 25 cents for the can, another one 50 cents for the can. That's the reason why you separate the cost from the technical score, because as you all sitting around tasting the three cans of green beans are just asking, what is the technical quality of the green beans that have been presented to me? Then we give those scores and you weight it. Let's say 80-20 is in this particular case, and I'll go into that, 80-20. 80% of the score in this particular acquisition, broken down into subcategories, and subcategories was 80% was the quality of the vendor. 20% was based on price. And I will shorten up this second analogy for you as
No. But basically what you said.
80-20.
Basically you said.
And then the two methodologies. So when you
assume.
Yes.
You said that it was not a low bid. It was actually looking at all the other things. So it was not the low bid cost for what you're looking for.
Right.
They didn't take cost as the primary thing. Will you please, and people in the back, please, I understand you're not green beans. be more precise.
Yes.
We understand what you're trying to say. You don't have to go around the moon. Just be straightforward. Mr. Can you help him out, please? Thank you. Your next question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So so I get that so 80% was evaluated by the technical committee, the technical aspects, and 20% was the separate process on costs, is my understanding.
Correct. That's what he said.
Now, that then established a competitive range, is how I understood your previous testimony. That process, those two scoring processes together.
Chairman, supervisors, it resulted in a score for each proposer.
Yep.
And as the highest scoring proposer, we move forward with Clean Power. Where the discussion of competitive range comes in relates to, was there any vendor close to achieving the same score who could possibly achieve and merit the acquisition? In this particular case, the scores were such that the clear winner was Clean Power in this particular. So they established that range as being the highest.
So at the point at which, in this case, you're saying there was no one within a competitive range. They stood above all others. That's the explanation I'm hearing.
That is correct.
And so at that point, you go into negotiation solely with them. So they then get to come back with a new price, with some clarifications. It sounded like there were some additional services, or they tour the facilities again, and we come back and we go a second round. But only they proceed to that. Only they get this second opportunity.
Supervisors and chairman and supervisors, direct answer to your question is yes. In fact, we're precluded from negotiating outside of that competitive range. We are not required to negotiate with all proposers. In this particular case, we also required during that negotiation process that should the cost come back, because we, at that stage of the game, we're somewhat negotiating services, but we were negotiating costs, saying, guys, if you really want this, here's where you're going to have to sharpen your pencil. Let's say we cannot have them come back and come back with a higher cost, because then that obviously then would be an issue with other proposers.
And is the competitive range established at the outset, or is that a determination that the department makes as they look at the scores and say, oh yeah, that's not close? Or is that a set standard, industry standard? I mean, within 10%, or what is the?
As chairman, supervisors, as in this particular acquisition, it was an 80-20 ratio between the two. As the technical scores cannot be adjusted, it's predominantly the cost scores that drive you into that competitive range. And as such, in this particular acquisition, their initial cost was low enough that even if the low-cost provider, the low-cost provider in this particular situation didn't have a high enough technical score, that the cost overrode their technical score.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm
I think I understood that. Okay. Mr. Chairman, so
in other words, the
I appreciate it. I think I got that. What it leads me to then question is one of the strategies the department seemed to have pursued, which was this idea of bundling all the contracts. Though the RFP included, I believe three categories of buildings, and said that they could be contracted out as they had been several contracts, that the clear desire was to bundle them, and I wonder whether this analysis of competitive range and price and quality is the same if you looked at it with respect to each category, each of the subcategories, or did this bidder come out on top only when looked at sort of in the bundling situation, which was, you know, could be seen as giving certain bidders an advantage. I mean, I'll just editorially I'll say bundling has always been, you know, contrary to the to our facilities report of our consultant saying you should bundle everything, bundling has always been what you're told. Unbundle stuff if you want to be competitive for disadvantaged businesses and emerging businesses. So I've always heard that. You need to start unbundling some of your stuff. That's why none of the small firms can compete. So I question whether that analysis was done to ensure that the bundling did not advantage certain bidders.
Mr. Lee?
Find my notes on that particular subject.
Pardon me?
I'll find my notes on that particular subject.
Oh, okay.
Chairman, supervisors, in relationship to bundling, if we separate the bundling, unbundling as a discussion as it relates to DBE and address that as a separate issue, as I'm willing to, as we did meet the DBE requirements related to this acquisition and then some, the notion of bundling across the enterprise, I'll give you the short versions of the merits of unbundling or bundling, I should say. Is it part of the rationale for our RFP process? And keeping in mind that we did have the three facilities groups separated, two reasons is one to provide the best value to Milwaukee County. Should there be a disparity, to your point, of separating them in the best interest of the Milwaukee County. Also, it was an initial effort in order to get three different departments to agree on a comprehensive action plan. A consistent cleanliness standard addressed issues such as background checks, security, and performance of services. I candidly believe that if this is successful and that we do continue to award it to this particular vendor as a one lump sum deal, we have received benefits in regards to the cost of services now. But if we can demonstrate to the vendor community that we do have the ability to consolidate our services and move these services, it provides for a much better and a more competitive environment in a 3-year period from now. And if you would like to enter into discussion later, I can give you specific examples. But as part of this RFP, the rationale for the bundling process included one, management for the point for issues, risk management, and payables, It's not a high-risk category in to establish this process of one county, one acquisition process. Cost leveraging for the future, the ability to move the business, as I stated, is the best part. The ability to implement a continuous improvement program, put delivery of services and quality through a continued improvement process with a selected vendor and only one vendor, and provides for a strategic relationship providing for an improved delivery platform, that we're only doing this once with one vendor across all portions of the enterprise. I won't, at the request of the chair, bore you with the five major points of the reason the methodology is referred to as vendor rationalization.
Would you like to hear it?
Well, I don't know that was responsive to the question. So I understand the advantages of bundling. Conversely, there are advantages to unbundling. And so the real point is, if there wasn't such a strategic focus on bundling, would the same outcome be in front of us? Or would other firms have been more competitive in certain categories? So did the decision to use the bundling strategy affect the bidding process?
As Chairman, Supervisor, as we evaluated the three buildings, yes, that was considered. And direct answer to your question is no, if we did not bundle these three buildings, which we did have that opportunity to do when we took the proposals, the decision was made based upon the price and the technical score from this particular vendor that it was in the best interest of the county or the best value for the county to continue the bundling. In other words, we did do both. We had the breaking them apart opportunity, and we had the putting together opportunity. And we recognized the opportunity was that if we kept these buildings together, we not only service to do our vendor rationalization, but also receive the best value related to the vendor that was presented to us, certainly all significantly from a technical score. And I'll...
Mr. Chairman and Supervisors,
state your name for the record.
I'm Reuben Anthony, Jr., the Interim Director of the Community Business Development Program, and I'd like to respond to the bundling versus debundling questions that you put forward. For when you do bundling gives you the advantages of economies of scales, and most of the time when you bundle, it is more cost-effective. Debundling is a benefit to disadvantaged businesses. It gives them an opportunity to manage a portion of the contract as prime contractors. So even though it may not be cost to the cost benefit, you know, of the county, it gives DBEs an opportunity to become prime contractors and learn how to grow, you know, into becoming prime contractors that can eventually take on big contracts like this. So in this instance, even though he did not debundle, we haven't debundled in this situation, we have a 25% DBE goal, which is going to be achieved. So in terms of maximizing DBE participation and getting the most cost-efficient proposal, this approach works, you know, to the best benefit for the county. And so, again, just to compare the merits of bundling versus debundling. Debundling is a good approach, and it gives DBEs the opportunities to operate as primes. Under the bundling scenario, they operate as a subcontractor or a subconsultant in this situation.
I appreciate that answer. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that I'm getting the root answer, which is, are you telling me that this would be the proposal that would rise to the top no matter which method we use? So if we unbundled this, so there's not one vendor that's more competitive if they were just bidding on BHD, or one vendor that was more competitive if they just bid on the courthouse, but they, you know, but taking on the hospital, maybe not. You know, there's no variation. So the technical scores didn't, which make up 80%, didn't vary substantially enough that it would have affected the process. This would have been, this is the cream. They rise to the top. There's no competitive range in any category.
This is a qualification-based selection, and it's different than when you use a low bid process. Qualification-based selection is experience and qualifications weigh heaviest. After you look at experience and qualification, then you look at, and the experience and qualification is typically called the technical proposal. After you get through that process and saying that what is the best and most qualified technical proposal, then you look at cost. And then so cost is a factor too, but the technical proposal outweighs all other things. This is the best technical proposal, and it would most likely under any one of the scenarios that you presented, it would give you the most economic and best opportunity for the county, most cost-effective opportunity for the county.
Okay. We'll have to disagree on the effect that strategy question had. But, Mr. Chairman, I have one other area that he touched on that I just want to probe a little bit, and that's the in terms of the DBE. I think the statement was made that, you know, they met the DBE requirement, and so, you know, everything's good. But I just wanted to probe whether the way in which they're meeting the DBE requirement is different at all from how others would meet it. So is it equal? How is it scored? I mean, an actual DBE vendor versus a prime who I heard that they would use temporary service that they would employ, and that's how they meet their DBE requirement. Are those seen as equal? Objectively seen as equal equal in satisfying the DBE requirement, and so there's no value put on a DBE prime vendor versus a prime who would use some other method to get their points?
Right. There's no value put on how you actually use the DBE in this particular situation. 10% will be used for clean right, and they'll be doing cleaning services. 15% will be used for temporary plus, and they'll be doing staff augmentation and those sorts of things. There's no specifications to say how you have to accomplish the 25% here, and they chose the county chose to go this route.
So they get the same number. I mean, that's a full satisfaction of the DBE. Whether you are a DBE, you would get the same number of points versus someone who is going to just. It's not prorated for the amount of the con. I mean, wouldn't if you are a DBE? Doesn't the whole thing? It seems that would be worth full points versus. You're just going to a few pieces of the project are going to. I'm stunned by that.
Well,
doesn't that decision, in concert with the clear preference for a bundled strategy, essentially ensure that you'll always have those companies which have the experience and scale to do the project, because 80% of this is on the technical merit. So you never have DBEs that would rise to be competitive under such a scenario.
Yeah, no, that's a little different question than the question that you asked about before, whether it was most cost effective to take this route or another route. I think in the long term, when the opportunities works best when DBEs have an opportunity to grow as primes. I'll admit to that. But every contract opportunity doesn't give or permit that. But when it does happen, I think that's best for DBEs, that when they have opportunities to grow as primes, and then in the future when contracts like this come up, they have the opportunity to be more competitive. You know, but specifically when you have a 25% DB goal, there's no real specifics to say, you know, how you have to accomplish that. You know, You don't have to accomplish it with a debundle process. Obviously, the debundle process gives them more professional development and allows them to develop the resume to compete into the future. So that. But again, you have to put forth a strategy for utilizing and accomplishing the 25% DVE goal. And in general, under this type of procurement process, a qualification-based selection and the technical merits of the firm or the company that you pick to carry out the services outweigh other factors.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the
leeway.
Time.
Yes, we might. Dr. Anthony, I have to disagree with you for a number of reasons.
Supervisor Mill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You cannot sit up in here and tell me that a DVE, how they made, I was not going to say anything until you got up here, that a DVE going to a temporary service going to be able to develop and grow with less money to tell those individuals that they can come a business. Second of all, when you have the other DVE who already have experience in here get only 10% of the contract. And then when you talk about bundling everything, as you well know, if you really want to be fair across the board, they could have, when it comes to looking at how you look cost versus technology or whatever words that you use, it is discretion of how you want to view that technology of saying these companies have that. Because if you went strictly with cash and look at the qualifications of those individuals, that's when most lower bids happen. And people have opportunity, and when you look at all these facilities. As we talk about clean power, we're talking about clean power, who the person who won this. I have talked to BHD, people who work at BHD, people who work in this building, and everything else are not happy. So when you talk about, you look at all your vendors and your consumers, there's a conflict that I'm getting here, that people telling me how they feel. I walked in with some other people this morning, and I asked them, how do they feel about who got the contract? They was not happy. They said they only could speak for themselves. So I'm confused when you talk about technology. When you look at the hospital, and you, please go out there and talk to those individuals, they are not happy for whoever's out there. I'm not going to know. I don't know who's out there. You're looking at chemicals. You're looking at qualifications. Did we look at the people who work in those fields, what kind of certifications they have at all the different groups? Because when you look at technology, or what's the word that you use?
Technical.
I would like to see your sheet, not the sheet of the individuals, but the sheets of exactly how you define everything, because you give me your version, but I know I need to know the definition. Because you're telling us one thing, and on the sheet would tell me another thing. Also, tell me the cost. Since you can make it blind, tell me the cost of each one, how much it really, each one has said, this is how much we can do. And I would like to see the difference, the fluctuations. Because you don't have to tell me who, but you go circle clean power, and say, this was clean power, and then say, what's the rest of them? Because right now, this report, if you look at it, what is it really telling me? What you was going through. So I can't get the sheet. I didn't ask who was on the panel. I'd like to know how you scored it. Not the score, just what's the sheet I would look at. Because you're not giving us the full skinny of this. Be transparent to let us know how you came with this conclusion. And I'm glad, thank you, Mr. Lee, for being a little short-winded on some answers now. And when you're talking about DBEs, give me a break. Yeah. Because you can't tell me, Dr. Anthony, that when you was at the state of Wisconsin, you say the way you can look at some temporary services and they're going to grow a DBA firm, that I'm going to a temp service, and that's how you're going to make your requirements, I'm insulted.
Okay, now.
Thank you, Supervisor Mill. Any other comments from committee members? We do have speakers. Before we go to the speakers, we have Supervisor Stamper wanted to make a comment, and then if we could have Jeffrey, is it Packy, be prepared to come up next. He's from Clean Power, and then we have Dave Summerscales after that. Supervisor Stamper, you have the floor. If you could make it short, we do have the supervisor would like to make a comment. Mr. Lee.
In deference to Dr. Anthony, let me make it clear that the DBE requirements were signed off prior to his arrival in CBDP by the former administrator related to this acquisition. So.
All right. Thank you. Supervisor Stamper.
Thank you. I need clarification on the competitive range component. Do you mean that there was nobody that competed in a certain range? Is that why no protests were given? Because from my understanding, I thought there were people that disagreed and there were some protests. But I see in the report that there have been no protests. And in relation to competitive range, could you explain that to me? Nobody within a certain point system came close to the highest score, or what does competitive range mean?
Mr. Lee or Mr. Tyler, could you address the supervisor's concern?
Answer to one of your questions was no, there were no protests. Answer to your second question in relationship to competitive range, it is a mathematical calculation that the score on the technical score, that there are 800 points that were provided for the vendor that we're moving forward with was high enough such that regardless of the cost that a second vendor would come in with was such that they could not overtake the total score.
Does that satisfy your question, Supervisor Stamper?
No. He said the cost would not come close to the total score. My question is, was there a vendor in this range means a certain limit, in the range, competitive range, was there a vendor not close enough to the highest score to determine that there was nobody that could compete?
Direct answer to your question is yes, that is true.
Okay. Thank you. If the supervisor is done, if we could clear the table, we have some members of the public who'd like to come up. As we said, we have Jeffrey Packy from representing Clean Power, if you'd like to make a comment. And then following Mr. Packy will be Mr. Dave Summerscales.
Hello. Thank you for having me. The chairperson's temporarily out of the room, but the rest of the committee, thank you very much. Jeffrey Packy, President and Operating Officer of Clean Power, LLC. It is my intention today with my quick 3 minutes is to just go over and verify the responsible contractor question that I know has also arised. Clean Power was established and has grown out of the greater Milwaukee area since 1969. I sit here today in front of you representing probably the most scrutinized janitorial service in the state of Wisconsin. We are a non-union employer, but we are an employer, and that is significant, and that is who I'm representing today. We have over 2,300 employees in the state of Wisconsin. We have two offices in the Milwaukee County area, 9 offices around the state of Wisconsin. We service over 1,400 different locations in the state of Wisconsin. We have many professional affiliations with Building Owners Management Association, International Facility Managers Association, trade organizations like the ISSA. We are certified. That question came up a little earlier. We are certified by third-party vendors in our training process, in our green cleaning process, in our safety processes. We also are, one of our subsidiaries is Al's Window Cleaning Service. Obviously, you have slip and falls in buildings when you're a cleaning contractor. When you're in the window cleaning industry, you have slipped and significant injuries, if not death. So we understand the safety component. We understand the compliance component of what we do very thoroughly. I wanted to just real quickly, we also deal with other state, local, municipalities. Like I said, we've serviced this market for over 44 years. We do work with public library systems, public school systems. We work with the state of Wisconsin. We work with county government. We work with local government as well. We also have done projects at the airport. We take care of two airport facilities in the state of Wisconsin currently. We know about liability. We know about responsible contracting. We know about providing a service with people that are well-trained and well-screened. We provide what we would determine and call a livable wage, a market wage. You can't have 2,300 employees if you're not paying a market wage. People today, as all of you know, and we talked about the bus system earlier, can go and find another job very quickly and very easily in Milwaukee County. So we feel that we don't accidentally employ, of those 2,300, about 400 are in Milwaukee County. You can't accidentally be an employer of 400 people if you're not taking care of them. The questions about the DB were addressed. I won't bring that up other than to say we are prepared to take care of that requirement. That requirement in the RFP criteria was simply a pass or fail, to my understanding, and we did receive a pass on that, a passing score, I should say. We're talking about the extension of a contract that we have. We are currently servicing the Behavioral Health Department on Watertown Plank Road in the detention center. That for us represents about 45 to 50 employees. We are talking about, as was stated, the significant add of the COGS building in the courthouse. That for us will represent approximately another 80 positions, 80 jobs, 80 additional jobs to what we have now. That would move our Milwaukee County employment from 400 to 480 with the completion of what has already been a letter of intent for us to start this contract. We are fully prepared to do that. We're prepared to do that in a very responsible manner. That is what I respectfully put in front of the committee today, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. No, we appreciate your comments, and our next comment from the public is Mr. Dave Summerscales. Thank you for stopping by.
Thank you.
Up next after Dave Summerscales is Dominique Smith.
Good morning. My name is Dave Summerscales from SEIU Local 1. I have actually some information I'd like to submit to the committee if I could.
What? Could you?
I have testified before this committee in July about this issue in an attempt to make it clear that Clean Power is a perfect example of a vendor that is bad for Milwaukee County on so many different levels that it's hard to know where to scratch the surface. Some of the information I gave out to this committee in July included employee handbook from Clean Power with two weights, an hour violation, state wage and hour violations in their own handbook, including worker testimony last time. Some of those workers did not want to come to the hearing last time because they were afraid of retaliation from Clean Power. There's also, as you can see in this document I provided for the second time, there is a long, long list of problems with Clean Power. Questionable business practices, paying of poverty wages, mistreatment of their janitorial staff, including retaliation against workers that spoke up and said they wanted to organize. I just bring to your attention something here on page 3. It deals with the Milwaukee County facility, that's why. A Clean Power employee who was assigned to clean the Milwaukee County Juvenile Detention Center filed a complaint in May 2010 alleging Clean Power retaliated against him for reporting sexual harassment to the company, to Clean Power. And the details are in there if you want to read them. That's just one of many. There are many, many race, sex, disability, discrimination complaints against this company. A lot of them are listed in here. There are wage and hour violations. There are labor law violations, on and on and on. That's not even getting to the poverty wages that this company pays and the difficulty of their janitors to live on the money that they make. Two current Clean Power employees are here to talk more directly about that. But just briefly, more than 300 of Clean Power's employees and more than 500 of their children rely on public benefits to obtain things like health care. They're on Badger Care. That ranks Clean Power 35th out of the top 100 employers in the state whose employees use these programs, which we all pay for as taxpayers. Not to mention people that are on WIC, that are on food share, that are struggling because, you know what, they're making between $8 and $9 an hour for Clean Power. Most of them are part-time. If you do the math, that's about $9,000 a year. I don't think anybody in this room can live on $9,000 a year. So, you know, it goes on and on about that. You can read this at your leisure. You know, it sounds to me from listening to this that 80% of Mr. Lee said 80% was given to quality of the vendor. It seems to me the quality of this vendor is very poor. So how it was rated so highly with 80% of it based on that, I have no idea. It also sounds to me that the county is about to go to use a temporary service to clean this courthouse, to clean their facilities. Is that what Milwaukee County wants to be doing in the business of poverty wages, the business of using a temporary agency, essentially, to clean this building? What will those temporary employees make? We never heard that. Are they going to make $7 an hour? Are they going to make less than the poverty wages they already make with Clean Power? So I just think there are too many questions about Clean Power to give them this contract. Far too many unanswered questions. I'm not just here to be against something, to be a no, 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 although we would strongly encourage the county and this committee to reject Clean Power. What we're for is we are yes to rebidding this RFP. We are yes to making sure that responsible, living wage-paying cleaning contractors get a chance at this work. Because Milwaukee County should be in the business of not creating more poverty wage jobs. We've got tons of poverty wage jobs in Milwaukee. The county can take a step towards helping alleviate that problem by choosing a responsible contractor. We're saying yes to supporting a responsible cleaning contractor that treats his employees well and pays them a decent wage. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Dominique Smith.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. How you doing? My name is Dominique Smith, and first off, before I start, I want to say I'm not against Clean Power not getting the contract. I'm here to basically say Clean Power is a good company, but they don't pay like they're supposed to. I personally make $8.75 an hour. That's, if you add it up, that's $23 a week. $220 every two, I'm sorry, $23 a day, $220 every 2 weeks. That's nothing. They want a lot for a little. You know, that's not right at all. They don't do pay sick days, you know, week holidays. They don't pay. We get one day. We already make close to nothing. No pay holidays, no health benefits, none of that. I don't have any of that. You have any questions for me?
No. just here, how many hours a week do you?
Oh, we work 7 days or 5 days a week. Off weekends, I work 3 hours a day.
So it's part time.
That's why I say 3 hours a day, $8.75 an hour, $23 a day. You know, that's not $220 a week to live off of? That's not right.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker is Carol McQuay.
Good morning. My name is Carol McQuay, and I have worked for Clean Power for 9 years. When I began working at Clean Power, the salary was $8.50 an hour. In the 9 years that I've worked there, we received a 25-cent raise. I work 15 hours a week. That is 30 hours every 2 weeks. Each week, that's excluding taxes, that comes to $131.10. Clean Power does not provide health insurance benefits to any of its workers. I have a coworker that I know of who had heart surgery. He received a stent in his heart. He had to return to work in 2 weeks, or he wouldn't have his job. This is what he told me. He's not here to tell it, but that's what he told me. Now, he's an older man. John is in his 70s now. Now, but he came back to work. He had no insurance. He probably received insurance. I don't know how he received insurance. I have this splint on my hand through lots of repetition on the job. I receive health insurance through my husband's job. What we need from Clean Power is holiday pay, vacation pay, because we do get tired. Many people come to work very tired, but they know that if they don't come, they won't get paid. I was out from work a week ago because someone came to work ill. I got sick because of the sickness they brought to work, so I was out a week with no pay. So that hurt me. And it hurt him to come, but then he infected everybody else. And that's not good. I would like for Clean Power to provide personal days, which I think is very important. And I would like to say that on this day, 9 years ago, my father passed away. And when he passed away, I was out a week. No personal day, no personal time, no pay, nothing. But I had to do what I had to do. A couple of years ago, I had a brother who passed away.
Excuse me, we do allot only 3 minutes for your comments.
Okay.
So if we could just stay on the topic and
okay, I'll stay on the topic, but
15 seconds.
My thing is being compensated for just human things, just for human things. A lot of the workers that I work with are very unhappy. Tired workers are not effective workers. Morale is very low. And I'm at a point now where I felt like I have to say something. I have to take a stand. And I don't care about retaliation. I don't care anything about that because this is not a career move for me. And so this is my concern. Whether the county gives Clean Power this contract, that's up to the county. But if you should do that, make sure that people's rights are protected. Make sure that they get these benefits that they need. Or else the building will not get clean.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Mary Patarakis, is that correct? Mary's in the back. There she is. Yep. Sure. Claire Riley and Jackie Riley.
Okay.
If we are going long on this subject, if we could just keep our comments to the clock and succinct and
you don't have 9 minutes.
Okay.
I'm sure you can make your point effectively. We've chat quite a bit.
So. Okay. Well, we're here today as the layoff housekeepers from 2009. Okay. You all know what it would cost to bring us back. I'm not going to go through all the numbers and all that. And you also have our personnel files in human resources. You see all our credentials. You see what you got. I'm asking for you to reinstate us and bring us back as county workers. We worked hard for those jobs. We took certification. You know what we had to do to keep that position. We had to take bio classes. We had to take infections control.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? These people, I feel horrible for them. That is terrible. 3 hours a day? You know what? You
can't live off of that.
No. And their bid that they're giving you, their lowest bid, yeah, they're giving you that, but they're only putting these workers to work for 3 hours a day. That's
wrong.
Who
cleans for the rest of the day? Who takes care of the times when there's nothing in the bathroom, no tissue, no paper towel? Who's going to take that? Who's going to take on that responsibility?
We had a flood a few years ago in the basement of the courthouse.
Yes.
Okay? Let me tell you. We stayed here. It happened about 1:30 in the afternoon. We stayed here until 4 o'clock the
until
next morning.
Gone.
In wet clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you got these people here at 3 hours, who's going to do it? If they do it, they're going to have you. They're going to charge you guys something more. So the bid they're giving you is the lowest bid that they're going to give you because they're paying your people nothing and giving them nothing, no benefits, no nothing.
So where's the rest of the money going? Mm-hmm. In their pockets.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're asking for a livable wage. You could be a hero in this whole thing, and you have people out at Clean Power and Mid-America. You can, if you reinstate us, we have people that have retired. You can bring them on, and you guys all can look like heroes. You can take someone out of poverty and give them a chance in life.
Mm-hmm. We understand that if we came back that we would not be working from the time that we had just lost.
Mm-hmm.
But we would come back as new employees. We'd like to come back. Well, they'd like to come back because I'm retired and disabled, but I'm on their team. They should come back.
Thank you. Thanks for your comments today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you all.
Thank you.
I do.
Speaking again, registered but not speaking against is Dolores Hughes and Jeff Goodrun. Supervisor Borkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could have Mr. Piquet come forward again, please. I've got specific from Clean Power.
Oh.
Please.
Thank you. Chairperson, Jeffrey Packy, President and Chief Operating Officer of Clean Power. Good morning.
This is actually the second time that this item has come before this committee. I'll speak for myself. I was caught off guard the first time. It was a special meeting at the airport, and there was only like two or three items. And this item, and it wasn't noticed the way it's noticed today, but caused a lot of consternation. We went a good hour plus, and some of the speakers that spoke this morning were eloquent back in July at the airport. And I had some significant concerns. And at that last meeting, similar to what happened this morning, there were allegations, may be true, may not be true, where shots, in essence, were taken at Clean Power. And I had asked if there was a representative from Clean Power at that last meeting. Unfortunately, there was not. And so I'm going to ask that question to you, sir. I don't know. You heard some. I realize that Some of the legal issues may or may not be delved with, but I do know that there were some pointed daggers at Clean Power that went unheeded from you all, and so I'm going to give you this opportunity now to give us your side of the story.
Thank you. Not being present at that meeting, I'm not quite sure of the specifics. We can get into those definitely. One of the pieces I didn't make clear as I sat at this table a few minutes earlier is that Clean Power is and always has projected ourselves as being a part-time supplemental employer. When people come to us, we do have full-time jobs. Those jobs have benefits, health benefits, PTO, time off benefits for our full-time employees. Of our 2,300 employees that I stated earlier, probably about 70% of that group is part-time supplemental income. That is how people are brought on, hired, and trained in our company. That is said from day one, day two, day three. That is why they come to us. We offer an extreme amount of flexibility because of the number of locations that we take care of, that it's very, very convenient for people either to their home life or to their other method of income, their other job, or their spouses. As you heard one lady say, we know that spouses work, and sometimes the other spouse then in the evening can come and work a part-time supplemental job for more income. So that's really our primary focus when we're bringing people on. As I said earlier, there are full-time positions, obviously, in this contract that we would love to bring on. The ladies that were in the back of the room would love to interview all of you and have you come back and work for us, because we are open and constantly interviewing. So I want to make that clear that there is a continuing process for us as far as hiring, training, and screening people. That's an ongoing task of ours. We have a very professional HR department that handles our employees very, very well. We have an open line, anonymous service. Those calls, those issues, those concerns from employees and managers alike, come right to my desk and to our head of HR and to the CEO of our company. So we have an open line communication that is constant and that is taken very seriously. As I said earlier, safety issues are paramount for us, as are any employment issues that come up with pay or hours.
And I did not list all of those allegations, accusations from that July meeting. The one thing I did hear consistently, both today and in July, was the topic of your contract at BHD and the fact that there are people saying that you're not doing a good job out at BHD, I would know how you would react. I would know how I would react, but I mean, if I was the company and I'm hearing somebody say, okay, they're doing a lousy job out there, I don't know. I mean, how do you react to something like that? I'm not sure, but I think it needs to be addressed because it's been brought up a couple of times. And you know, obviously people haven't been specific, and I would entertain that person or people, if they've got BHD-specific problems, to come forward. But I guess I've heard BHD a couple of times, and I'd like to have your response.
Maybe I could.
Oh, okay.
We have an expert in the room.
Oh, and
I'll try to live up to that. My name is Jim Wachtels. I'm one of the managers out at the Behavioral Health Building.
Okay.
One of my jobs is to help oversee the cleaning contract at Behavioral Health. And up to this point, it's been a pretty smooth contract. A lot of complaints come past my desk via phone call or via email. If there's any big concern, I want to know about it. At this point, I don't know of anything that's unresolved. If there's a disgruntled employee, that may be probably the biggest challenge that we faced is when we went contract, going contract from in-house was a very difficult maneuver. We could be paying Clean Power gobs of money. It was a very difficult transition, because basically we fired 50 permanent housekeepers and brought in about 25. So I don't, not to defend Clean Power or promote them, but we also have to look at what we're paying the vendor. I mean, if they're paying $8-9 an hour, they've got a budget that we've submitted. Say, you've got to kind of be within a certain, for all vendors. I mean, we're not telling them the Fort Knox is open, you know, that we can pay $20 an hour. So there were a lot of disgruntled people because a lot of permanent positions were lost. As far as the overall cleanliness of the building, the structure that we put in place is that we've got some pretty good supervisors. What impressed us about Clean Power is the management structure. They have very little turnover. I think the national average is about 300%. Clean Power, I see the same faces. I see the same managers. There's some continuity. We've got monthly inspections that get turned into me. We get quality reports from infection control. We get reports from quality management. We get reports from the nursing administration. Once we went contract, what we put into place was a big emphasis on quality. So if something's fallen through the cracks, I like to give you my phone number, my email. If something's being missed, we pretty much jump on stuff right away. There's not a lot of stuff that's outstanding. Are there disgruntled employees? I'm sure there are. Are there former county workers that, who are upset that they lost their job? Yes. I wasn't happy that I had to go and fire them, but it was a budget thing. It was actually a county thing that said, we need to save money. We're going contract. So, you know, if we want to pay a higher wage, then we need to, I guess, look at what we're willing to pay a contractor. But, yeah, that wasn't a very pleasant thing. You might get some carryover, some residual from when we fired all those in-house people. It wasn't a popular decision. Laid off. And, again, when we went from in-house to contract, we cut the budget significantly. And so there was a big learning curve. What we did with an in-house staff, we can't do with a contractor. And so there was a learning curve. And again, it wasn't a popular decision. The people who were in-house did a great job. It was not an easy or popular thing to do. So it might have been there's a lot of people who are still upset about that decision. But that's a county thing. That can't be taken out on the contractor.
Excuse me, we're getting way off track here. The fact is, Supervisor Burkowski, you asked to have a person from Clean Power. Excuse me. Just hold your horses. Supervisor Burkowski, stick with the Clean Power executive. We're done hearing from BHD, and let's move forward.
Okay. I noticed the young lady that's up at the front table had her hand up. Are you from Clean Power?
I am with Clean Power.
Are you able to add to, I'm assuming, your boss's comments?
What I wanted to add, I have a few things I wanted to add. One, when we did this process back in 2009, the RFP process, when you went from county employees to the outsourcing, there was in the RFP an evaluation criteria that stated if you were to hire on or had a plan in place to hire on Milwaukee County employees. We did put together that plan and presented that in our evaluation. We did hire some. We had an informational meeting at BHD once we were found out to be the contractor for BHD, and we had employees that wanted to apply with us, come to that meeting. We still actually employ 5 full-time Milwaukee County employees at BHD. So.
Okay, thank you. You know, and I guess it leads to my final point, okay, and where I was discouraged at our last meeting was the housekeepers from our past, 2009, and full disclosure, okay, I'm not Lily White in this deal. I voted for the private contract, so guilty as charged, okay? My job is to do the best that I'm supposed to do for my taxpayer constituents. Needless to say, there is a human element here, and it's not so much I don't necessarily have a bone to pick with Clean Power per se, but it goes back to 2009-2010 when we did have this contract. There were things said from people that used to be in county employment about those former employees having first dibs, if you will, for those jobs, okay? Subsequently, as time has gone on in the last 3-4 years, there have been things that, I'm not an attorney, but are borderline illegal, if not illegal, from what I am hearing. Now, whether or not those are true remains to be seen. Now, again, it has nothing to do with Clean Power at this stage. But there are some of us, including myself, Supervisor Weishon, and there may be others, hoping that we can help those previous county employees from 2009 get a job, okay, and be treated, you know, as best as possible. And I guess while I have Clean Power up here and stuff, I'm going to make this plea. I don't know what your resources are. I don't know. I don't know what's in the contract or whatever. You know, at the very least, I would like to see, you know, and I realize that, you know, you're a part-time operation. Okay, I get that, and so yeah, benefits aren't necessarily owed per se. Okay, but I guess I'm looking for some kind of you can't give me a commitment, but I'm trying to help those people that were our housekeepers back in the day, did not take or accept or get employed by MidAmerican, subsequently haven't had a chance to actually get employment in Milwaukee County for whatever reason, and now there are allegations that files are being tampered with, and all I know is it's a lousy situation for those poor people, and I am asking Clean Power that if you get the contract, that I'm asking that these people get certain recognition, and I will extend that by saying that I know that you have 1,400 locations and 2,300 employees in this state, that if there's some way that you can piecemeal, nickel and dime, to help these people get to a full-time employment. Again, I know it's not part of the contract, okay? And I would ask that the public, who I'm working with and trying to help, trying to keep all of our avenues open. And so I'm asking the leadership of Clean Power if you could consider that. I know that this is an informational item today. This committee probably will not be voting on this because of Act 14, but obviously all of us have the final kick at the cat when it comes to the board. So I've said my piece, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We do have, this is just an informational item. I believe we've covered it quite well. One final question from Supervisor Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the last meeting, the members of this committee was handed a folder, much like we were handed information today, that had negative information about Clean Power in it. I went through it, and there was one thing that disturbed me greatly, because it had a very valid relationship to the RFP and procurement process here in the county. And that was related to how employees at Clean Power are paid. It's my understanding that there were questions in the RFP process to ask what type of a wage or a prevailing wage Clean Power would be paying if they were awarded the contract, and a dollar amount or a range was given, but yet no information was provided nor asked for, but became public knowledge after the fact that there is supposedly parts of Clean Power's employee manual that calls for employees to mandatorily pay for uniforms that they don't get reimbursed for, and they're not able to return if they don't keep the job. Or even more disturbing was Clean Power having fees, administrative fees, for employees to get verification of employment. So to me, it was one thing if an employer pays a wage that the workers are willing to accept in a reasonably free market situation. And if those employees are subsequently in poverty as deemed by our governments and request public assistance, so be it, and that is the system we have set up right now. However, if the contract is awarded partially based on what we are told the employees will be paid, and then there is further information that comes out that shows that the company is taking money back from the employees in order to respond to public assistance requests for information to verify their income, I see a circular problem that inhibits the employees, that goes far beyond whether or not they're making a living wage or a fair wage or they're unionized or not unionized. It seems to be something that could be fixed very simply and easily, but currently could be perpetuating the cycle of poverty. And I'd like to hear from the managers if they have a comment on that, Mr. Chairman.
Could you make a brief comment to that?
I will try to keep it
just
brief.
Right.
I apologize. Let me just refer to one note. Our human resources manager was not able to make it this morning, but we did address that. We are aware of that. Two things. First of all, about 93% of our overall cost is associated with wage. So as was stated earlier, the wages that we are proposing make up a tremendous cost structure for what ends up being the fee to the county. So we are primarily part-time. Our part-time supplemental income positions are starting at $8 and $8.50 and up. Our full-time benefited positions, $10, $10.50 and upward from that. So I wanted to make that very clear that the minimum wage is not something that we are paying. However, to your point, Supervisor Alexander, we do have as our company policy and in our employee manual that if an employee does not allow to give us 2 weeks' notice upon them leaving our organization, that those hours that occur in that last pay period will be paid out at a minimum wage. That is not an unusual practice among service industries, and it has also been it's been vetted and approved by the NLRB. So that is not an unusual practice. What we ask for, as any employer would, is for a professional courtesy of notice of people leaving our jobs. As was stated earlier, our industry average for turnover is about 300%. Our company's average is about 65%. We control that. We take great pride in that because that is a huge cost. If we take on that cost, you take on that cost. We look at this when people are coming in, even for a part-time supplemental job at $8.50, we want them to be professional. As the lady stated earlier, there's great pride in cleaning a building. It's not a sexy, glamorous business, but we take great pride in the service that we present to all of our customers because there's a health issue involved in that. There is a health issue involved in not having clean working space, and we recognize that. So
point, you've answered the question.
That was one of your questions. The other was regarding the costs for uniforms and to look up records. The open records to our employees, all employees, both current employees and past employees for up to 3 years, have access to their pay stubs and annual W-2 forms from 2008 through our ADP online website. We have an automated pay system with direct deposit and pay cards. Employees are also provided a document when they join our company called Important Things to Remember that specifically directs them with this informational sheet and outlines hire dates, scheduled hours, and hourly wage, and that can be used as a document for employment verification reasons. Failing that, if the employee does not want to use the online procedure, and we do have computers in our lobby that many employees take advantage of to do just that, the employee is charged $10 for looking up historical data that they need And that is that time is taken from our human resources department to go in to do that work. So it's not compensation directly to those people, but it's an attempt to recover that cost. Those dollars are put into a kitty at the end of the year and added to our fund for the donation to the Children's Hospital families that we donate to. Our company matches that dollar amount. Those dollars are maybe $200 to $300 in the course of a 6-month period of time. So we are not talking about a large amount of dollars. We do try to coach our employees to go through the online process, which is free. Those that do pay the $10, and I want to just clarify one other thing, we do not charge that $10 for anything related to governmental agencies such as the proof or need for child support or Social Security. Those forms and that documentation we provide free of charge. So really, primarily what we're doing is giving people their pay stubs that they already have access to but are not wanting, for lack of a better word, to receive it on the online system.
Fast clarification, if you will, Mr. Chairman. Am I understanding correctly that you're telling me that all employees have access one way or another without charge, fee, or reduction of their wages to get proof of employment and status in order to get food stamps if they need them?
Correct.
Thank you.
All right, seeing no more, where this was an informational item, we'll be taking a...
Mr. Lee, make one.
Okay, Mr. Lee, you seem to want to make one last final short comment.
Yeah, there were some questions related to documents that were presented to you at the last session, and I'd, if permitted, I'd at least like to address three of the salient points. Documents presented to you related to safety, and I guess Clean Power could probably address these in detail, but related to OSHA violations, three of them were cited in the documents you received. One violation was prior to even Clean Power owning the entity. The second one never existed and was never fined. And the third one was recognized and judged during the RFP process. In relationship, I believe you have 31 DWD Employee Rights Division site mentions in front of you.
We understand... everything that's been presented to us today. As I said, thank you for your time today, and we'll be moving on to the next item. 15 minutes. We will be at this time taking a 30-minute recess. We'll be back at 1:15.
Thank you. I mean 2:15.
I thought that's an hour off.